Many years ago, in the city of Florence, the most beautiful city in the world, there lived a lovely young woman, Ginevra Almieri. She was born of a wealthy merchant family, but she was as good and kind as she was beautiful, and so well-behaved, so gracious, and with such a sunny disposition that all who knew her could not help but love her. When the time came for her to marry, many suitors appeared at her door. Old men, young men, rich men, not so rich men, tall, short, fat, and thin, handsome and not so handsome, they all came. But as time went by, it became obvious to anyone with eyes to see or ears to hear, like the servants and the footman and Ginevra's old nurse, that the man Ginevra loved the best was Antonio Randonelli. He was young, handsome, and charming, and just as kind as Ginevra herself, and no one could doubt his love for her. But unfortunately, Antonio was not a rich man. He came from a good family, but his father had made some bad business decisions that left his family destitute at the time of his death. Poor Antonio had to work for others to make enough living to support himself and his widowed mother. When the time came for Ginevra to make her decision as to who she would marry, she knew her heart. But being the dutiful, modest young woman that she was, she asked her parents who they thought would be the best choice. And they told her, "Oh, my dear girl, is it not obvious? You should marry Francesco Agalino. He is very big in the wool trade. So rich, he will make you a wonderful husband. And he is not so old, really. He should be able to give you at least 2 or 3 good sons before he dies, and then you'll inherit his fortune. Ah, it will be perfect." And being the dutiful daughter that she was, not wanting to displease her parents, Ginevra agreed. So Ginevra and Francesco were wed, with Ginevra's family supplying a sizable dowry, and they were happy enough. At least, that's what everyone thought. But not long after their wedding, a terrible catastrophe befell the whole city of Florence. A terrible, horrible plague came upon the land, the Black Death. It was hideous. Perfectly healthy people would suddenly take to their beds with fever. Their bodies would break out in great pustules, and in only a matter of days they would be dead. Bodies began to pile up. There were not enough healthy people to even bury the dead. This continued for many months, and the whole population was decimated. But worst of all, people were overcome with fear. They began to fear even the slightest sign of disease, abandoning the sick in hopes of saving their own lives. This went on through the spring and the hot summer. As the weather began to cool in the fall and into the winter, the disease seemed to subside. There were fewer deaths, but people were still very much afraid. And so it was that in early winter, Ginevra took ill. Her husband, not being the bravest of men, immediately isolated her in an old wing of his palazzo. He sent 2 very old, very expendable servants to care for her. This old couple did not hear or see very well, and when Ginevra fell into a deep sleep caused by her fever, they thought she had stopped breathing, and they told her husband she was dead. Taking them at their word, and not being brave enough to check himself, Francesco ordered her to be buried immediately. She was wrapped in a shroud and winding sheet and quickly carried to the church of La Santa Croce, where she was interred in the tomb of the Agalino family. The tomb itself was a great stone sepulchre, sunk into the floor and covered with a great slab of marble. The slab was pushed aside, Ginevra's body deposited inside along with the other decaying corpses of the family. Quick prayers were said, and the tomb covered over again. But what no one knew, as they beat a hasty retreat from the church, was that Ginevra was still alive. In the damp coolness of the tomb, Ginevra awoke from her fever. She did not know where she was. All was dark, and the ugly, musty smell of decaying bodies nearly overpowered her. She shook herself free of her winding sheet and began to feel about her, touching the decaying flesh and bones. She was terrified, and she prayed that God would deliver her. As she looked about, she saw a tiny strip of light on the roof of the tomb. When the attendants had covered over the tomb with a slab of marble, in their haste they had left it slightly ajar. Ginevra stood up, gathering her shroud about her, and felt her way along the cold, wet wall. By luck, she found a ladder used by the gravekeepers. She climbed the ladder, and using all the strength she could, she dug her fingers into the crack of the marble slab and pushed it aside just enough to allow her to slip her body through. Once she was free of her tomb, she could see that it was night. It was bitterly cold, for snow had fallen the day before. A cruel wind whipped through the streets of Florence that night, but Ginevra gathered her winding sheet about her, for that was all she had to cover herself with, and began to make her way back to the home of her husband. When she arrived, she knocked at the door.
Francesco! Francesco, let me in! It is your Ginevra! I have come back to you!
But Francesco, truly believing that his wife was dead, thought he heard a ghost.
Go away! I'm sorry if your funeral was so hasty. I will pray for you tomorrow and have a mass said, but do not torment me so. Go away!
The more Ginevra called for help, the more Francesco refused her, ordering her to leave. Poor Ginevra didn't know what to do, so she gathered up her winding sheet and started off for the home of her parents. Exhausted from the cold, she knocked upon her parents' door.
Mama! Papa! Please, let me in! It is your Ginevra! Have mercy on me, or I shall die from the cold!
But like Francesco, Ginevra's parents also believed she was dead.
Go back to your grave, poor spirit! We will pray for you in the morning!
And they would not open the door to her. Gathering what strength she could, Ginevra tried to seek help at the home of her aunt and uncle, but no one would even answer her or come to her aid.
Oh, surely I shall die, she thought. Is there no one in this wicked world that would help me in my distress?
And it was then that she thought of Antonio. She remembered how he loved her, and she thought perhaps he would have some regard for her still. Slowly, she made her way down a little back street into the poorer part of the city. That little street, which had no name, was known from that day forward as La Via della Morta, the way of the dead. Now, as for Antonio, he too had heard of Ginevra's death, but unlike her husband or relatives, tucked snugly in their beds, he sat up that night, grieving for her. She was the only woman he had ever loved or ever would love. If he had not had his mother to care for, he would have entered a monastery, for surely he would never love anyone else. And as he sat, thinking of his beautiful lost love, he heard a tiny sound, like the scratching of a mouse in the wall, and he heard a weak, dying whisper.
Antonio! Antonio! For the love of God, help me! Please open the door!
Antonio leapt from his chair and ran down the stairs, taking three steps at a time. He threw open the door of the house and caught Ginevra up in his arms.
Ginevra! My beautiful Ginevra! I knew you could not be dead. I knew God would not take you from me twice. Heaven could not be so cruel. Oh, my darling Ginevra!
Antonio scooped her up in his arms. He called for his mother to wake up and build up the fire. He laid her in his own bed and covered her over with warm blankets and quilts. When she became conscious, he fed her hot soup. She was so grateful.
Antonio, I owe you my life. Will you do one thing for me? Go to the church of La Santa Croce and see that the marble slab on the tomb of the Agolini is put back into its place, and make sure that no one sees you.
Antonio said he would do as she asked, and he did. He also went to the market the next day and bought all kinds of food for her, fat capons and sugared almonds and fresh fruits and vegetables. And as the days passed, Ginevra grew stronger until she was entirely recovered. But Ginevra noticed that Antonio seemed to be sad, and she asked him what was wrong.
Oh, my love, surely you will soon be wanting to return to your husband. Antonio, don't be foolish. I promised to be married to that man until death did us part. Well, death did us part, and when I tried to go back to him, he sent me away. Oh, no, Antonio. I will never return to that coward. If I am to have a husband, I would that it were you. Oh, cara mia, there is nothing I would like better in the world, but how could that ever be? Antonio, I have a plan. Go to that so-called husband of mine and offer to buy my clothes. I am sure he will sell them to you. Bring them back to me here.
Antonio did as she asked, and true enough, Francesco was happy to sell his wife's clothes, fearing they were ridden with the plague. The next Sunday, dressed in her finest gown, on the arm of her Antonio, Ginevra made her way to Mass. The first person they encountered was Francesco.
What is this? You cannot be my wife. She is dead. But if you are my wife, what are you doing with that man?
Death did us part, Francesco. You are no longer my husband.
Ginevra's parents were equally shocked to see her, but she would not even speak to them. And when the mass was over, Ginevra sought an audience with the bishop. And now comes the most amazing, truly miraculous part of this whole story. The bishop was a reasonable man. Ginevra explained what had happened to her with such grace and clarity that the bishop granted her a divorce, based on the theory that if marriage ends with death, and her husband so believed her dead, then she was no longer married to him. He also declared that Francesco should return her sizable dowry, which he had to do. So Ginevra married her Antonio and bestowed upon him her dowry, making him considerably richer than he had been. They lived happily together and had many children. And while they always hoped that their children would be courteous, dutiful, and grateful to them, they also encouraged them to think for themselves and to always follow their hearts.